Well, welcome to week number two of 2023. This is the Rexilon podcast. Remember that if you want to see this newsletter, so you actually want to read it is available as well. And but obviously for some of our viewers, they'd like to listen to it, and this is obviously the audio version of that. We also go into some detail here that maybe you don't get in the newsletter, and that's obviously why we go through this. So 2023 is upon us, and the markets have t has really started with a bang. Dawn and I are going to be talking about the JSE. Dawn, I suppose the big thing here is that after recording a return of 3.6% in 2022, All Country World Index, which is now global equities in rand terms, were significantly lower, but the All Share actually recorded a return of 3.6% for 2022. Since then, we've really seen the markets taking off. The JSE All Share has so far this month increased by 7.7%, and that has now hit an all-time high for the JSE. Wow, that's not something that one sees in these kind of markets. Most people would kind of just intuitively think, why is the JSE hitting an all-time high? Whereas other markets are perhaps had a not a bad January, but are certainly not hitting all-time highs. And that maybe just speaks to how depressed our market has actually been for an extended period of time.
That strikes me when we get these kind of movements on the JSE is that the pattern of the JSE, the pattern of returns on the JSE is inclined to be flat with spikes of activity. And if you're not in the market because you think you're going to be able to time the market, this is probably a case in point that in a very short space of time, if you were not in the market, you could have lost out on what might be, a substantial amount of return. In fact, as you've just said, month to date, it's double what it was for the entire of last year.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's interesting because we know as South African investors that the JSE has been depressed for a long period of time. You have to kind of go back. If you look at the 2-year return for the JSE, that is now 12% per annum, which really starts looking almost like its long-term average returns over time. But if you look over a decade, the JSE has only really returned 8.5% per annum. And if you put that into context where you could have earned what you could have earned out of bonds, the bond market in South Africa gained by 7% per annum over that same period. Now that's interesting. So for on a risk-adjusted basis, it would have been better for you just to have been in bonds over the last decade, where South African equities have just given you a marginally higher return. It really you need to look fast forward to what's happening today to try and see returns that are much better than what you're receiving out of the international market. And that almost is a little bit of a sea change for me. I'm seeing almost there's a re-emphasis potentially on emerging markets and a re-emphasis on what emerging markets could potentially do. And I suppose that stems from the broad theme out there that maybe markets will become more valuation driven rather than just growth at any price. I mean, Dawn, that is one thing that we've seen in the last decade. As rates have continued to fall, companies have just continuously been able to raise capital, bring ideas to markets, which obviously is great for ideas and for new type of companies coming to markets. But it's not necessarily it not it doesn't necessarily focus on the correct things from a valuation perspective. I'm almost seeing change in that starting to happen.
Yeah, Kobe, I think we spoke a bit about this in the newsletter, is that for the last decade, particularly in the States, but also in Europe and in the United Kingdom, they have almost had a free lunch. Capital has almost been free, and that has changed. And as you said, when capital is free, then they can pump money into to new ideas, and this has driven the tech sector forward enormously. But that's changing. Companies now need to look at some of the fundamentals that we were perhaps more used to looking at the beginning of the millennium, like free cash flow, like productivity and that kind of thing, and not just relying on free money to fund their growth going forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose if you want to look at a South Africa in context of that, we've got some great valuation-based opportunities in South Africa. So if you just look at the forward numbers in South Africa, so I'm not just looking at complete markets here, but South Africa is trading off a forward price to earnings ratio of about 8.7 times earnings. Whereas if you look at the All Country World Index, which is now the MSCI, which is very much geared towards kind of North American exposure through the tech sector still, that is trading off 15 times earnings. Now, 15 times earnings doesn't sound like a lot, for international stocks. And in the long term, it might not seem a lot. But remember that the other thing that we're kind of heading into is the whole issue of an earnings recession driven by a contraction in the business cycle. The Federal Reserve is speaking about this all the time. They are saying that we want to see wages coming down, we want to see a recession, and we want to make sure that inflation is really, really under control before we start looking at how one potentially drops rates again. And that is the process that's busy unfolding in front of us. So you might be buying the All Country World Index today of 15 times earnings, but you've had almost a macro sea change that has happened with the cost of capital changing. And you potentially find that as South Africa becomes a beneficiary of capital despite all the economic woes and despite all the political woes that you're seeing in South Africa. And then being said, it's probably going to be commodities that receive a lot of that capital.
Talking about commodities, Kobe, because one thing we looked at in the newsletter was the price of copper and how that, over the last few months has increased substantially, especially when you compare it to another commodity that we look at very closely, which is oil. And obviously driven by completely different factors, whereas commodity is more a manufacturing-driven commodity, whereas oil, of course, is a logistics-driven commodity. Well, what are your feelings about commodities in the year going forward? And obviously, South Africa, as a producer of a lot of commodities, could well be a beneficiary of that.
Yes, I mean, it's an interesting place to be because what are the two things that drive commodities? The first is economic activity. So you need the economic activity in order to drive commodities. That's the first thing you need. The second thing you need is you need to make sure that you have a cheap dollar. And the reason just simply is because most commodities are priced in dollars. So if you have a cheap dollar and you have global activity, then you have a cocktail that potentially could work very, very well for commodities. Now, what is the one thing we have at the moment? Well, we have the DXY, which is a broad index of dollar strength or weakness breaking lower. You can see that in the rand. You can just see at the overall level, and we speak about that in the newsletter as well. Seeing the rand back at like the 1680 level against the US dollar. As you see the dollar breaking, you see commodities running. And I'll just give you some numbers here quickly, just from a commodity perspective. Anglo American, which everybody obviously knows, it's the big Anglo, the UK listed commodity trader, that is, or and commodity producer, shall I rather say, mining group, that's up 10.6% this month. Aframat, which really is an aggregate producer in South Africa but has some mining exposure, has gained 13.44% this month. And then just to give you another one here, and it's outside of the commodity realm, but we'll talk about China just now. And just as a throw forward to that, process is up 18.5% this month. So you've got commodities that have increased quite drastically in price, but it might just be because the dollar is breaking lower. From this point forward, if you have this global recession that's building and it starts making its headway through the economy towards the middle part of 2023, you might find some pressure for commodities. You might find them actually trading sideways for a while, maybe some pressure on the downside before you finally start seeing a washing out happening as far as earnings are concerned, and before these things take and before they take off. I think the better asset class to focus on today is bonds. Bonds have had a torrid time during 2022. If you look at the global bond, some of the global bond indices, those are down like 18% last year. Now that's a torrid time for bonds. If you speak to bond managers and bond fund managers and people that trade bonds, they'd say to you that is unheard of. And I think this is one of the areas that I think fund managers are hoping to focus on. And maybe some people are still sitting on the sidelines, but bonds is the one place that one wants to kind of have exposure in globally. Because as CPI continues to break lower, you continue to have interest rates that will follow it lower at some point. And that means obviously upward price of pressure as far as the price of bonds are concerned.
While we're still on the topic, and before we get to how China is going to impact global economies, in our newsletter, we published a projection there by Bloomberg that showed global economies cooling, and some of them really quite significantly over this next year. So, I mean, we've been talking about the potential of a global recession going forward. I think the only question now is just how hard that's going to hit.
Yes, I mean that's the big issue right now. I think if you spoke to most think tanks and economists during the kind of midway through 2022, all of them still had positive growth, real growth as far as world economies were concerned in 2023. That has now changed. A lot of those forecasters are now starting to take chunks of growth out of the world economy. They're saying that the world is going to go into recession in 2023. All the forward indicators are showing it. And the only question, as you quite rightly said, Dawn, is how hard will this landing be? And that we'll only know in the fullness of time, because it really depends on what comes out of the woodwork. One thing that I continuously think about, and that is just in the back of my head, is the amount of credit that has been taken on by corporate companies in the Western world. A lot of that has been free money over the last 20 years, and a lot of that is now having to be refinanced. The refinancing rate for US corporations is much slower than mortgage rate refinancing. That's every 3 to 5 years when you talk from a corporate perspective. And that means that some of those, so if some of that debt is resetting during 2023, you're probably going to find companies saying, listen, but I can't honor the debt. And that puts the whole credit market potentially under stress globally. Now, how big is that stress? I don't know. How far does it go? I also don't know that. One thing I do know is that everything that's pointing towards this global recession is negative for earnings. And that makes me think, is a 15 times earnings on the All Country World Index potentially a good place or a bad place to be? I'd probably say it's a neutral place to be, and it's something that one has to watch rather than getting massively involved in equity markets. That really is at the tipping point. Interesting though, Dawn, on the other side of this equation is China, because China is busy opening up, right? I mean, you wrote about this quite extensively in the newsletter.
You know, China's always been very interesting to me. You know, I've done business in China. I've visited and done business in China. And, you know, my daughter used to live in Hong Kong and so have been very interested in China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and that whole region now for a long time. I think my biggest concern is the impact of this sudden, almost inexplicable reversal of the zero COVID. And how that is playing out on China. We're coming into the Chinese New Year. During the Chinese New Year, China basically closes down, not just for that week, which is actually not this coming week, but the next week is China's New Year. And they take it very seriously in the same way that we take probably the Christmas period seriously. And already the flight bookings in China are back to almost pre-pandemic levels, which is, if you'd said that even 2 months ago, I would have thought you were crazy with the zero COVID. Obviously, we aren't getting transparency out of China. That's not new. We rarely get transparency out of China, so we don't really know what the effect of the sudden reversal of zero COVID, especially into the rural areas. What happens during Chinese Lunar New Year is the Chinese go back to their families, and that often means going back into the more rural areas, and they're going to take COVID with them. And that, you know, there's a potentially, it, they could handle it fairly quickly. Beijing, by the sounds of things, has gone through its peak and it has come out the other side fairly unscathed. And, you know, hopefully the rest of China will be like that, because if there is a significant impact with zero COVID post Lunar New Year, the much hoped for economic uplift, which is probably one of the reasons that China got rid of the zero COVID in the first place, was the significant impact it was having on the economy. But if their wards are overflowing, their crematoriums are overflowing, and all of this kind of thing, you know, we aren't going to see a quick uplift in the Chinese economy, you know, come early February when they get back to work.
It's interesting because the Shanghai index is for the month so far for January is only up about 3.4%. Now juxtapose that relative to what's happened in South Africa, what's happened in on the NASDAQ, what's happened on the S&P 500, all of those are up by more than 3.4%. If you want to start seeing these kind of numbers that are up 7-8%, you've got to take almost multiple months on the Shanghai into consideration. And that just shows you the forward-looking nature of equities. You know, equities always forward look and try and understand these things. Things that worry me in China. Firstly, is there a reopening happening? Absolutely. Are the tech companies being beaten down because of the previous issues as far as political interference is concerned? Absolutely. They've been beaten tremendously up. I worry for China into the future. I worry for it for the reasons, for a political reason, mostly because it's a two-speed system where the capitalistic system is almost being squashed by the political system, and where they're going back to the roots of the Red Party. And they are trying to make this capitalistic thing that has grown over time really fit within the Red Party, and it's ill-fitting. That's one of the reasons I fear for China. And the second reason, which is something that'll play out over the next 20 to 30 years, and that really is a demographic issue. Demographics there look very, very different to other countries in the sense that the one-child policy has left this country with a demographic deficit, which means that they don't have enough people in order to support the elderly that will be coming up in the next 20 years. You almost have a Japan-like scenario busy playing itself out. And within that is the overall ideological confines of the Red Party. It's not a free market system. And therefore, you see decisions like you've seen around COVID, where it's zero COVID policy and then it has to change. And then you almost see this fly by night type thing where you're trying to find a way for these things to now all work together. And it's almost like policy by wire. You're trying to make policy as things continue. Investors don't like that kind of thing. So absolutely, tech has been beaten down, but I fear for the upside here. There'll be more upside, I have no doubt, but at some point it all peters out again, and you won't even see that coming from an investor perspective, you know? Dawn, I suppose the other thing that we maybe should chat about, and I mean you've seen something a wonderful story busy playing itself out in the medical aid world in December. Got a personal story that you've been watching from the sidelines. But for those that are South African investors, it seems like activating your international benefit when you are traveling overseas is important. Is that correct?
It's extremely important. Just to give you a little bit of background on this, and maybe a little bit more background than I've given in the newsletter, the sort of elderly parents of a very good friend of mine decided to go on a cruise to the Caribbean. They're in their late 60s, early 70s. They flew into New Orleans, decided to spend a couple of days in New Orleans before they got on the boat. And their first day in New Orleans, wandering down Bourbon Street, and I'm not sure how much bourbon they had in them, but my friend's stepfather fell and broke his leg really badly. He broke his femur, fortunately not too close to the hip, and he ended up in hospital. That was the point that I got involved, actually purely by accident, and that travel benefit hadn't been activated, which we just got straight onto the phone to the medical aid and activated immediately, and then started working with the medical aid to sort this out. Now, this is, I suppose, in inverted commas, just a broken leg, but already the bill is going to be north of 3 million rand, right?
Wow.
Which is not something that any of us, you know, medical aid costs are 10 times what they are South African private medical aid. South African private hospitals. So it's, you know, if unless you've got sort of 3 million that you want to throw at this when you already got your medical aid in place, it's obviously something that needs to be activated. So not only will they be covering most of the costs, there are going to be some out of pocket expenses. I think there's about €100 per day or $100 per day out of pocket basic, and there might be some more after that. But they're paying for the hospital and the step down facility where he is in at the moment. He's been declared fit to fly because his wife is also older. She's not a fit enough travel companion for him. She's not strong enough to get him on and off wheelchairs and this kind of thing. So they have authorized a travel companion who actually has flown in from Ireland and will be flying with him back to Johannesburg. Business class at Discovery's expense, and then Discovery will fly him back to Ireland. So you can see that, look, it's not completely hassle-free. There's loads of administration. Discovery have been speaking to the hospital and now to the step up. There seems to be more logistic problems around sorting out the coming back here, and this kind of thing, but it is happening. You know, they haven't got American hospitals demanding, you know, 2 million rand deposits and this kind of thing. So it's important. All you have to do is phone and tell them that you are going away, and that cover lasts for 90 days.
And I suppose we're speaking about discovery here, but it's not just discovery because
No,
we're
it's not
really
just
talking across the
discovery.
board. It
Yeah.
really is medical aid. So the things that people should do is just, and again, just tell me if I'm right or wrong here, Dawn. Step number one, tell your medical aid when you're going overseas. I suppose
Yes.
that's important.
Yeah.
And secondly, make sure you've got really decent gap cover in place because if you have those two things in
Yeah.
place, then it makes this a lot less with a lot less hassle than if you didn't have these things in place.
A decent gap cover doubles your cover from 5 million rand to 10 million rand for a start.
Amazing.
And then we'll cover those out-of-pocket expenses that you would have had to say pay with your medical aid. Look, I'm not 100% certain that every single medical aid does this, but I'm pretty sure they must. You know, they all try to stay competitive, and I'm sure the certainly the big ones like Discovery and Momentum certainly have it. But you know, I can't say off the top of my head whether they all have it or whether all gap covers have it. But if you're unsure and you're not with Discovery or the gap cover that I use, my preference, which is called Sorrego, then find out that you have this cover and make sure that you activate it.
Well, that's all we've got time for. It's week two
Right.
of 2023. Remember, this is the podcast. We publish this on Twitter. You can pick it up there. With Spotify, you can get some access there. Remember, soon it'll be on Apple Podcast as well. If you want to see some topics potentially covered here as well, let us know. We try and keep the newsletter pretty topical to what has happened in the week. But if it's anything that you think should be covered here, we're happy to listen. Please get hold of us on email. And thanks for listening.
Super. Thank you, Kobe. Bye-bye.